Chicagua with all their business gains intact. They paused as a train approached and moved to one side, letting the massive transport trundle by along its tracks in the middle of the road. So, this is a tale of revenge, and what terrible retribution he brought down on them, Lannery said. She knew what to expect. Her previous visit to Knox had been brief, but she knew people like Max Hagen. She'd met them all over the system.
In a way, Tree said. It took him a while. But he conspired to initiate a feud in Crystal City, and that resulted in a skirmish that left 3,000 dead. Wiped out the Volk family's entire network on Knox, and there was no link whatsoever to Max Hagen. He wasn't interested in ego or in anyone knowing it was he who caused it. He didn't want infamy. He just wanted revenge.
Yet infamy is his. Tree shrugged.
These things become known.
A sharp mind, then.
Sharp and brutal. The 3,000 included many children. I doubt he had trouble sleeping that night.
So he makes all his money from information?
The best way there is to make money.
Tree gestured around them at the buildings, the air hazy despite the air treatment units drifting and thundering around the dome's massive airspace.
This is all fleeting, constantly assaulted by the atmosphere. Or it can be destroyed, as we saw on the way in. Information is eternal, and that's where Max Hagen places his faith.
So is the Force, Lannery said. I'll put my faith in that.
My faith is here, Tree said,
touched the bulge of his blaster on his belt. Imported water, Lannery said. Seems ironic that he deals in something that represents purity.
Good cover, Tree said. And I don't know about you, but I could do with a drink.
They moved on, and soon, District 6's huge central square came into view in a shallow valley. It was a sea of movement, and for a moment, looking down into it, Lannery felt queasy. Countless people swarmed and swirled. Market stalls and more impressive structures strove to take their money from them. The smells of cooking mixed with the dome's manufacturing stenches and made her stomach turn. Somewhere down there, the head of the network, and perhaps her way to Dale. Lannery led the way down a gentle slope and into the melee. In the end, Max Hagen was easy to find. Perhaps he believed that concealment would make him seem more suspicious. Or maybe he was simply too confident to hide. He was certainly one of the most unobtrusive men Lannery had ever seen.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's him,
Tree said, frowning. They were standing in a food stall, mounds of root vegetables and racks of curing meat all around. Across the wide walkway from them was a water stall. That's all it sold. Water in various container sizes. The sign above the stall exhorted, "The finest water imported from Calamar. Certificate of authenticity available to those who doubt." The man standing behind the stall talking with a family of human workers was short and fat. His dark skin wrinkled with laughter lines, and the few remaining tufts of white hair on his scalp gave him a comic appearance. His eyes were filled with good humor, and with just a few words, he had the family laughing along with him.
It is, Lannery said. He has four people around him. The Nogri at the lizard fighting pit along the way, three stalls away. That tattooed woman selling fate readings we passed 100 paces back. And up in the buildings around the square, one sniper with a blast rifle and another with a rocket. All watching.
You Jedi,
Tree said, but he could not hide his admiration.
Best not use that word here. So let's buy some water.
They waited behind the family, and after they left, Lannery smiled at Max Hagen and approached the stall. She kept herself sharp, reaching out with her force senses to those hidden guards she had already recognized. The last thing she would do was let Max Hagen's appearance deceive her.
Ah,
Max Hagen said when he saw Tree.
What brings you here, Tree Sauna?
Tree could not hide his surprise at being recognized. Perhaps they hadn't dealt face to face, but it seemed Max Hagen always knew who he did business with.
He's my guide, Lannery said, and we'd like to buy some of what you're selling.
Max Hagen glanced back and forth between them. and never once did his smile slip, not even from his eyes. He scratched at the corner of his mouth, and Lannery tensed, hand drifting a little closer to the sword hidden beneath her robe. She probed at him gently, but before she'd even touched his mind, she flinched back. His thoughts were such a pit of filth that she could almost taste their rot.
Jedi,
Max Hagen whispered. And so? Lannery asked. Tree stood frozen at her side. Max Hagen stared at her, still smiling. He poured 3 cups of water from a plastoid container without even looking, lifted one to his lips, sipped.
Don't see many Jedi here.
He'd sensed her instantly. Ready this time, Lannery reached out to read him, but he was close to her now. The wall he'd thrown up was solid and vast, and it had the feel of something enhanced. He had tech implanted somewhere in his skull, under one of those tufts of hair, no doubt, and it was top-grade stuff, high-end military. His protection went far deeper than simple bodyguards. I'm doing my best not to be seen, she said.
I've nothing against Jedi, he said.
He put his cup down and handed one to each of them. Lannery took hers and nodded for Tree to do the same.
Just don't,
he waved his hands above his head.
You know, mess with my mind or any of that crap.
That might be hard, Lannery said. Max Hagen laughed out loud, and it was so infectious that she actually found herself smiling.
Well, protection is always advisable, especially in a pit like this. Eh, Tree?
He grunted and sighed.
So, time for my lunch break. Come with me and we'll talk.
He took them beneath the square, descending one of the many staircases. There was machinery down there that powered lights and air filtration, and also places where less acceptable business was conducted. Brothels, drug bars, fighting rinks. Lannery sensed and saw them all. Built in ruins that were testament to Greenwood Station's past. Sometimes it was easier to build new upon old. But Max Hagen had no interest in such underground endeavors. Through 3 doors, along several corridors, and then down a secret staircase concealed behind a locked wall panel, they emerged eventually in a room that might have impressed those corporation officials in their high tower.
Nice,
Lannery said as he led them inside. They were on their own, yet she had no doubt Max Hagen was well protected here. She felt the weight of battle droids buried in the walls, and suspected that his implanted tech probably controlled everything about this room. One wrong move, and chaos would erupt.
I do enjoy some comforts, he said. Oh, and don't think for a moment that I'm imparting any sense of trust by bringing you here. I have dozens of these rooms all over the dome. I haven't been to this particular one in a long time, as can be witnessed by...
He picked up several bottles from a table and threw them into a corner.
The bad drinks selection. Apologies.
Not here to drink, Tree said.
Here to buy more mercenaries, Tree?
Max Hagen's eyes twinkled as Tree squirmed uncomfortably. But Lannery did not take the bait. I'm looking for someone, and Tree says you can help, she said. He might have arrived already, or his ship might be incoming. He'll have people with him. They call themselves Stargazers.
Looking in your Jedi capacity?
He's my brother, Lannery said. It was no answer, but it seemed to satisfy Max Hagen.
It'll cost you, but I'm a fair man in business, so I'll let you make me an offer.
500,000 credits, Tree said.
Lannery held in her surprise, and was pleased to see Max Hagen's eyes go wide.
A generous offer, he said.
Tree smiled.
I'm a fair man in business.
Max Hagen strolled around his opulent room, running his fingers along surfaces and tutting at the buildup of dust. His name's Dalian Brock, Lannery said. I need to know where he is, and he mustn't know I'm here.
Are you going to kill him?
Max Hagen asked. That's none of your business.
True. But every time I use my network, I put it at risk. And as I'm in business for pleasure, there's always a price over and above money. Generous though your offer is, Tree.
Lannery did not respond.
Added to that,
Max Hagen continued,
do you have any idea how much business would suffer if anyone knew I was helping a Jedi?
We won't tell anyone, Lannery said.
Oh, I know that.
He spoke with such assurance, such confident control, that Lannery felt a shiver down her spine. Only one other person had ever made her feel like this. Dagon Locke, the one time she'd seen him during her short retreat on Bogan. None of the others with her party had seen him, and the master supervising them had told her that it was impossible, that prisoners were kept separated by force fields. But though he had been little more than a shadow on a distant hillside, she had felt his eyes upon her, and the weight of his regard. Heavy. Dark.
So, Max Hagen continued, an answer to my question is also part of the price. Will you kill your brother?
Lannery considered the question. It was one she had confronted and struggled with already, and it had caused more distress in her than finding Dale's bloodied, torn clothing 9 years before. But the answer was already firm in her mind. Only if I absolutely have to. Max Hagen nodded. His eyes were on fire.
My stall, Dusk, he said. If he's in Greenwood Station, I'll know by then.
He plucked an electronic device from his belt and held it out to Tree.
I'd appreciate untraceable bonds, if you will. And the transfer should be the full amount.
Half now, half, Tree began.
The full amount is fine, Lannery said. I can see you're a man of honor. Max Hagen frowned for a moment, trying to make out whether Lannery was playing him. Then he laughed out loud again, head back, hand pressing his side. This time, she felt no urge to laugh with him. I need a shower, she said. I want to change my skin, buy new clothes. The man's a disease.
I did warn you.
And where do you get so much money?
You don't want to know.
I do, Lannery thought, as they walked as quickly as they could out of District 6. I do want to know. She made sure they weren't followed. Max Hagen would have his eyes on them somehow, she knew, and his attention was something they had bought along with his help. But someone following them would be too much of a threat to ignore. And she did want to know about Tree, and where his money came from, and Dusk was a while away.
I know a place we can go to,
Tree began. No, we'll walk. I don't like his knowing I'm here. He'll have a trace on us somehow, but I'll feel more comfortable on the move. Besides, I need to know this place more.
Why?
Tree asked. Useful if it comes to a fight. She nudged Tree's shoulder. Come on, let's buy a couple of tankards, drink while we're walking. We'll fit right in. And you can tell me something about yourself. They bought drinks and walked, and all the time Tree was talking, Lannery was taking in their surroundings, getting the lay of the land, locating herself in relation to the rest of the dome and the damaged sector, and possible exit routes to the outside if the need arose. She tried hard to make herself believe she wasn't being helplessly fooled by Max Hagen.
I made my name in violence and my money in secrets.
Lannery's own silence had encouraged Tree to speak, and she was not about to interrupt his flow with questions.
My third Leku set me aside, even among the Twi'lek community on Kalamar. It invited ridicule. You wouldn't think that, would you? That in a society filled with so many shapes, species, and creeds, a simple extra something would set me apart.
He snorted.
I suffered as a child, and that set me on the course I took through all my young adult years.
He fell silent, and they passed a square where small, sick-looking creatures were kept in metal-fenced stalls. The animals were completely silent, and it was the humans and other species who made the most noise, as individual subjects were hoisted up on an apparatus, hung from their back legs, and butchered. Meat and money changed hands. The cattle watched, eyes heavy with knowledge. What course? She asked.
The path of violence. I killed my first man when I was 17. A street fight outside a tavern on one of Kalamar's less salubrious islands.
No one cared that he was dead. And after a day, neither did I. It had helped me. His mocking, his violence against me were washed away. He looked down at his palms as he walked, by his blood on my hands.
Killing should never be easy.
But it was, and I became really good at it. Defending my honor, I'd discovered that I was a fighter. Others soon noticed. I slipped into crime. There was always a part of me that resisted, but the rewards easily helped me fight back. I drove down the doubt and embraced the new worlds opening up for me. Wealth, power, status. I became feared and revered in equal measure. A name. I gathered others around me and formed my own criminal organization from the bottom up. It was unintentional, really, that creation of a gang. But it just happened, and I relished every moment. They left the square with the doomed cattle and entered a warren of narrow alleys between low buildings. The sounds of life flowed from open windows, screaming infants, arguing parents, entertainment channels, music. Lannery felt apart from all that, and the weight of her mission bore down on her even more. Her heart beat with its urgency. She should have found Dale by now.
"You don't look like a crime lord," Lannery said. "You don't seem like one now."
"Now I'm not. Like I said, I made my name in violence. Once that name was made, and I'd moved my operations to Chicoqua, I became one of many. I was lost. On Kalamar, I'd had an empire. On Chicoqua, I was just another upstart. The real crime lords there looked down on us, picked those who they thought could help them, sometimes slaughtered those who looked beyond their station. And that was something I could not help doing. I expanded too quickly, reached too far and too fast. I was noticed.
And? Lannery asked. Tree's Leku betrayed his nervousness and how uncomfortable he was with his memories.
And they gave me a chance. Killed many of my lieutenants, but saw something in me that they thought might be of use. They were...
He shook his head as if finding it difficult to explain.
Like Max Hagen, Lannery said.
Only the very least of them were like him, Tree said. The worst monsters, beyond anything I could ever want to be. They repulsed me, but they gave me a chance to live, and I took it.
What chance?
To make money by keeping secrets. I was on my own once again, and lonely. Two of the nine houses employed me to be their messenger. They gave me secrets that could not be entrusted to the written word or technology, could not be transmitted or relayed by unreliable droids. I carried such secrets for them, and if any ever escaped, I would die. I still would. I could tell you such things, Lannery.
But you won't.
No. And even the greatest Jedi could not pick them from my mind after what Dan Powell has done to me.
She's protected you, Lannery said, understanding at last. By making Trisana impenetrable even to Jedi probings, she had given him the perfect mind in which to maintain those secrets from the past that could be the death of him.
It's a small part of what she promised, Tree said, his voice dropping. Because I want my life back. The gangsters haven't called on me for almost a whole Tython year, but they will soon. I don't want it anymore. I want everything that Dan Powell promised. A new identity, new face, new home. And to forget everything I've done.
He laughed softly, touching his third Leku.
Surgery. I want to fade into the crowd instead of stand out. I want to be normal.
You'll never be normal, she thought. Not after what you've seen and done. And Lannery should know. But she said nothing to shatter his dreams. While he still dreamed, he could help her. She felt sorry for him, but she also recognized that a wish to leave such a life did not absolve him of the guilt he had earned. He'd told her only a small part of what he had done. His red skin was stained with blood, though of how many victims she would never know.
After this, Dan Powell will set me free, he said.
He seemed so confident, so sure. She's a master of her word, Lannery said. And she gave me a large part of what I am, too. Tree raised an eyebrow, and his leku formed the questioning touch. But Lannery said no more. He might have opened his heart, but her story was not one to share with someone like Trisana. Lannery nodded to the dome's western expanse, where filtered yellow light bled weakly across the city. Dusk is close. Time to hear Max Hagen.
Chapter 12. Chasm.
Ashlaw. Bogan.
They're just moons. My own destiny lies elsewhere, and it has such gravity.
Dalian Brock, Diaries, 10,661 TYA, Thoyor Arrival.
Lannery wakes from a dream of home, in which she is dreaming of the stars, and Dale is sitting beside her. He is bathed in firelight, but most of his face is in shadow. Still, she can read him from his stance and his stillness. He is staring at her with a terrifying coldness. What? Is there something? But she knows there is no threat from outside. They are a day away from Anil Kesh, camped beneath a copse of heartberry trees. They have eaten several berries each, and Lannery's stomach is warm and comfortably full, the berry's goodness thrumming through her. There is wildlife in these foothills that might mean them harm. Acid spiders, and rumors of a family of flame tigers that cross the Moon Islands. But she would sense if any of them came close. She would know.
I am the chasm,
Dale says. His voice is lower than before, deeper, as if echoing from somewhere deep.
What do you mean?
She sounds like a scared little girl. She is scared. Dale shifts, turning toward the fire so that its light reveals his face. He is still her brother, but he looks older than before. Wiser. As if she is seeing a Dale who has already completed his great journey.
I have depths waiting to be filled.
Places you can never see and go, because you're Jedi.
And my depths are my own, not steered by something else.
The Force doesn't steer me, Dale.
He snorts. She is even more scared. She went to sleep still knowing who her brother was, but now...
What happened?
She asks.
I am the chasm. I have depths to explore and fill.
Depth implies mystery and fullness. But in you I sense only void.
Your Force tells you that,
he says, almost spitting the words.
And you believe it?
No. I know that because of my love for you as a brother.
For the briefest instant, a look of regret seems to cross his face. But perhaps it is merely a flame from the fire, casting a sympathetic shadow.
My own great journey ends soon, he says. After I've taken everything I can from Typhon, bled it of everything that can be of use, I'll be leaving. Don't get in my way.
At dusk the next day, they approach Anil Kesh. Lannery has heard many stories about this place, but nothing can prepare her for the reality. The temple itself is an incredible structure, graceful and brooding, huge and yet insectile in its shape and proportions. An engineering marvel that surpasses any other on Typhon. Its Thoyor floats about it, sometimes close, sometimes farther away. It's believed that it drifts with the Force. Beneath the temple, the chasm. One of the most amazing places on Typhon, and also one of the most enigmatic and dangerous. The chasm is a seemingly bottomless pit within which Force storms rage and mystery resides. No Jedi has ever gone deep enough to find the chasm's bottom, or if they have, they have never returned. The stronger one is with the Force, the greater the chasm's detrimental influence, disorientation, pain, and eventually death. Many have tried. Some have died, and some have gone so deep that they returned insane, deluded. Suicide is common among those who ignore all warnings and their own better judgment to try. One of Anil Kesh's main aims is to plumb the depths of the chasm, because it is Tython and the Force at its most mysterious. Lannery has seen hollows of Temple Master Quan Zhang discussing the chasm, and even through these, she can sense his awe and fascination. The Jedi, he says, will find the bottom one day. It's what might exist there that possesses them to keep trying.
I am the chasm, Dale said.
Standing close to Anil Kesh now, Lannery expects him to be staring at this strange wound in the land, but he seems untouched and unconcerned. Unlike him, she can feel the draw of the chasm and its incredible primeval power. The Force is in turmoil within her. She feels sick. To manage that sickness, she knows, will be one of her first lessons at Anil Kesh. This is not the final destination of their great journey, but Lannery cannot help feeling the sense of an ending hanging over them both. Greenwood Station was a city that never slept. The sun had set, and the dome was now illuminated by hundreds of huge lights suspended beneath the massive support ribs. They were a poor substitute for the sun, but Lannery supposed this was their night. Shifts were changing. The air was filled with the smells of industry and cooking and sewage, and she and Tree were once again approaching Max Hoggins' imported water stall. She saw him from a distance, closing broken shutters across his tables and instructing several helpers on where to store those bottles not yet sold. He waved away a couple of late customers with an apologetic smile, then saw Lannery. His smile remained, but it was no longer soft. Lannery did not break her stride, but she did feel comfort from the Force flowing through her. Muscles tensed, her sword sang with power, and her senses, always alert, became attuned to danger. Max Hoggin was her focus, but if he meant her harm, then he would desire that focus. Any attack would come from those around him.
Trisana, Max Hoggin called. Lannery, so good to see you both again.
Tree glanced around nervously to see if anyone else had heard his name, and Lannery could not help smiling. She wondered how many enemies the Twi'lek had made over the years. I'm surprised you'd close up shop, Lannery said.
Only for a while. People travel to work now, intent on their journey. Or others go home, or to the taverns, where water isn't their prime concern. Also, I find that information is at its driest at this time of day.
I expect you're filling and resealing the bottles, too, eh?
Tree asked. Max Hoggin looked genuinely hurt.
You doubt my product?
Tree didn't answer.
Other water merchants come and go. They fill bottles from poisoned springs in the caves below Greenwood Station, drop in a few purifying tablets, seal them up, sell them as pure. None of them last long. That's why I'm still here, selling purity after 4 years. That's why they always come back to me.
Everyone buys their water from you? Lannery asked.
Everyone that matters, Max Hoggin said.
His face dropped abruptly.
But that's enough about water. Follow me.
He turned and pushed his way through curtains at the back of his stall, and Lannery and Tree had to climb over the tables to follow. He led them across the busy square toward a doorway in one corner. At first she thought he was taking them down into one of his opulent rooms again, but then she heard the sounds of revelry and smelled spilled drink and spiced food. When Max Hoggin entered the tavern, only a few inquisitive eyes turned their way. Most lingered more on Lannery than the water seller, and she kept the hood of her robe raised. She could never shake the feeling that her Jedi heritage was easy to see.
In the corner, round table,
Max Hoggin said.
I'll bring drinks.
We're not thirsty, Lannery said.
But I am.
He shoved his way toward the bar, and Lannery scanned the tavern. It was filled with workers, their jobs sometimes apparent, sometimes not. All manner of people, species, creeds. None appeared to be armed. She glanced at Tree, pleased that he'd concealed his blaster well. By the time she'd examined the corner booth to make sure it appeared safe, Max Hoggin was with them again. He must have had his bodyguards. But Lannery was slightly disturbed that she could not make them out in the crowd. Did you find him?
she asked.
Your brother? Yes.
He took a huge drink from an opaque glass.
Where is he? Still on Nox?
No,
Max Hagen said.
Lannery's spirit slumped, but she kept her eyes on Max Hagen. Inside, he was laughing, playing with her.
He's not on Nox. He's aside from it, in a place that in diplomatic terms is not here at all.
Explain, she said.
You're young for a ranger, aren't you?
He sat back on the bench and relaxed, resting his hands on his ample stomach. It was the fact that he made his smile touch his eyes that troubled Lannery the most. Not particularly. And what has my age got to do with anything?
Young Jedi often don't know as much as older Jedi. They're not told as much. Secrets have a way of being passed down. I should know. I deal in secrets.
Lannery drank, taking the opportunity to look around the noisy, smoky tavern. She didn't like Max Hagen using the word Jedi so much, but no one seemed to be listening. Her force senses alert, the irony that both men she sat with were shielded from her was obvious.
Your brother is visiting a place that still sometimes carries out commissions for your people. It's called Pan Deep. It's in the base of the central tower, in its roots, its oldest foundations. Close enough to the surface to benefit from Greenwood Station's life support systems and infrastructure, but deep enough to survive when the Jedi bombed us during the war. Closed off enough to be somewhere else.
I've never heard of, Lannery began.
Of course not. It's a secret. But don't you wonder why Greenwood Station only suffered a flesh wound? The domes around were reduced to nothing. The people fried or crushed or blasted. But here...
He raised a hand as if indicating the ruptured dome, repaired now, where a Jedi attack had scooped out a small portion of the city. So how do I get there? What does this place do? She asked, but she already knew. Dale was having his device built there. A sense of urgency took her, and she calmed her excitement.
High-end tech stuff,
Max Hagen said.
Very high. Military. Sometimes beyond. Really advanced science that I can't even be bothered to try to understand.
He smoothed a hand back over his bald head and passed his ear, smiling softly.
I've used the place myself on occasion. I have an interest in it, and even more of an interest in those who would use it.
He's there now? Lannery asked. With his stargazers?
He landed 2 days ago, and his ship is still in the spaceport outside the city. But I don't know how many people landed with him.
Tell us how to get into Pan Deep, Lannery said.
You're that desperate to speak with your brother, Lannery? And Tree, you're that eager to help?
Yes and yes, Tree said, answering for both of them.
Max Hagen glanced aside, and for the first time, Lannery saw movement across the tavern that sparked her senses. Two human men, short but strong, and neither seemed to be paying their drinks any attention. They stared down at the table where they sat, concentrating, listening, the glint of metal in their ears. Lannery leaned across the table, pleased to see Max Hagen pull back.
You know who and what I am, she said. You might mock my youth, but you're an older man who's survived all these years doing what you do. That's because you're wise. You court safety. So you'll know not to mess with a Jedi, Max Hagen. We've paid you for information which is gratefully received. So now we'll be on our way.
Max Hagen's smile remained on his lips, but faded from his eyes.
Are you threatening me?
Yes.
With the three of them frozen that way, Lannery ranged her senses out across the tavern. The two men, staring at the table. A Wookiee at the bar. A Zabrak just outside the door. A triple-barreled blaster concealed in her backpack but within easy reach. Three Nogri laughing uproariously in another corner. Blades tied to their legs. Claws equipped with artificial poison sacks. All Max Hagen's people. All watching her. If things went wrong, it would be a bloodbath.
and Lannery did not have time to be killing.
Nice doing business with you,
Max Hagen said, grinning. He pushed a small memory pod across the table, holding out his hand, palm up. Lannery swept up the pod, and against all her instincts, she shook his hand.
Good luck.
I don't rely on luck, Lannery said. She left the tavern without looking back, sensing Tree behind her all the way. Eyes followed them out. They passed the Zabrak waiting outside, and Lannery nodded at her.
He could have told us more,
Tree said as they walked back across the square.
You're not expecting there to be much on that pod, are you?
There was plenty he wasn't telling us, Lannery said. But the place will be easy to find. Trust me. As she walked, making sure they weren't followed, she slipped the pod into her wrist computer and accessed the Peacemaker's main computer. She instructed it to read the pod, carefully and with full protective protocol in case Max Hagen had tried to pass on a parasite, and search for construction plans of Greenwood Station. Come on, no time to waste. She imagined her parents' faces were she to tell them that Dale was still alive, and she remembered their expressions the one time she had gone home since becoming a ranger, as if they had lost her as well. Lannery could not breathe a word of this to her mother and father until it was over. And even then, she would only tell them if everything ended well. If she had to kill Dale, that secret would follow her to the grave. The ship located the newest construction plans it could find for Greenwood Station's central core and transmitted them to Lannery's wrist unit. As the midnight siren sounded across the dome, Lannery and Tree entered an abandoned warehouse in District 4. They were very close to the central column here, and looking up, Lannery could see the countless lights belonging to those who lived there. So many up there profited from what lay below, but that was always the case. The ruling classes always set themselves higher. From the plans, Lannery could see that the subterranean Greenwood Station was not a quiet place. The foundations of the newer city were made from old, tumbled buildings of the past. There were artificial structures deep underground, their uses not always obvious. There were also transport routes, massive tunnels carved into the city's substructure, along which the largest of its products were transported to its spaceport ready for export. Along with life support systems, water reservoirs, waste management plants, power centers, and storage facilities, the city was almost as expansive below ground as it was above. But the place she sought, Pan Deep, was not actually that far below the rest of Greenwood Station. What set it apart was that it was built within the central tower's deep foundations. It took some time to negotiate their way through the first subterranean level toward the tower. Lannery sought to keep their movements covert. She was already uncomfortable that Max Hagen knew their destination, and certain that he had withheld information from them. But she'd grown weary of his games. She was sure he was a consummate liar, but she had to assume he was telling the truth about Dale and Pan Deep. It certainly fit what she knew her brother was attempting, and that was something that, she hoped, Max Hagen could not know. The descent from the warehouse was down an old, rarely used spiral staircase, their feet clanging on metal treads, glow rods making shadows dance. Lannery recalled all her training at Qigong Kesh, craving the peace of that silent desert as she cast her senses out and around them. She smelled for danger, listened for held breaths, searched the deep shadows with force-enhanced sight, and if her mind touched one other mind intent on violence, she would know. After a while, they reached a long, winding tunnel that led toward the tower. She flicked on her glow rod. Just as she judged that they were beneath the central core of the tower, the tunnel opened out into an excavated cavern, a massive place with a floor sloping in from all sides toward a sinkhole in the middle.
Oh, Tree said. Oh!
He pressed a hand over his nose in disgust, and Lannery could only agree. They'd been smelling the rank tang of sewage for a while, but actually seeing this place seemed to make everything so much worse. The effluent of the whole tower flowed here,
Perhaps 10,000 people of a dozen species, all venting their waste into toilets and disposal units and dwellings and offices, taverns and restaurants. Rainwater already stinking with pollutants was used to flush, and now they could see the resultant rain of shack showering down from the high ceiling. Countless pipes and gullies led here, their stinking contents falling in blessed darkness to splash onto the floor. And the floor was moving, a thick stew of repulsiveness flowing slowly down the slope toward the large hole in the cavern's center. From there, Lannery guessed it fell into an underground lake or a deep fault in the planet's crust. Thousands of years of a city's refuse rotting in the darkness.
"You bring me to the nicest places," Tree said.
Lannery didn't reply, because that would have meant opening her mouth. She consulted her wrist computer one more time, then switched it off. The plans were of no use to them now. Pan Deep was somewhere not shown on the schematics, and she thought she knew how to find it. Tapping Tree's shoulder, she pointed around the perimeter of the massive cavern with the glow rod.
"You want to walk around there?"
he asked. Lannery nodded and moved on. She had already seen the overhang at the left, the space beneath protected from anything falling from above. It led to the entrance of a corridor hidden behind a projection in the wall, and once inside, the floor immediately sloped upward. She paused. Tree almost walked into her.
"What?"
he asked. "This is a hidden place, not on the plans. Might not be the right place, but I'll soon know. Give me a moment." She tried to relax, closing her eyes and breathing deeply, letting the force flow. In moments, the stink was gone, her senses cleansed and purified by the force, ready for what she sought.
"What are you looking for?"
Tree asked.
"Energy source."
She cast her senses outward. It was a dark place, heavy with the weight of Greenwood Station's central tower above and the many people who lived there. The air itself seemed to carry a taint of wrongness. Perhaps it was because of the city's military manufacturing, but she thought it more like a trace from the minds of those who worked and lived there. She had seen many people, and all of them seemed to be constantly moving or talking or eating and drinking. Few stood still for a moment simply to muse upon their lives. Perhaps to do so would be to admit the awful truth of their existence. Lannery shivered. Nox was long known to be a planet out of balance, and here more than anywhere. She delved beyond that shadowy trace and searched for power. In the tower above there were countless sources, but down here there were only a few weak, old generators winding down. And then she encountered a dark void of heavy shielding. She probed deeper, pushing hard, and her force senses forged through. Bright light. Heavy potential. Staggering power. "This way," she said. "We're going up again. But not too far." More corridors, and every step took them farther away from the stink. They'd been moving for some time, and Lannery was hungry and thirsty. But she was also excited. The last time she'd been this close to Dale had been on that dreadful, painful morning at Anil Kesh. "Here," she said. The tunnel they were moving along had rough walls and an uneven floor, but up ahead, she could see a steady glow. And nearby, the gutter thoughts of a violent man. She flicked off her glow rod. Darkness fell, but it was not complete. She grabbed Tree's arm and pulled him close, breathing against his ear.
"Guards."
Drawing her sword, she moved forward. Tree came behind her, blaster in hand. Her heart beat fast. She touched the guard's mind again, wincing back from his thoughts of violence, and only at the last instant did she realize her mistake. His thoughts had been a screen, a ploy. And as the blaster fire erupted, she touched his real mind and the visions of starlit triumph that burned within. Lannery flowed, and the force flowed through her. Movement and reality slowed, yet she moved with it, her perceptions and reactions enhanced.
She swept her sword around and deflected two laser blasts and advanced quickly. The man crouched behind a column attached to the tunnel's side. He wore a loose robe, similar to those of the Daibendu monks, but any semblance of holiness was wrecked by the weapon in his hand and the fury she sensed in him. A shot came from behind her and impacted the wall far along the tunnel, smashing rock into dust and blasting a flash of fire along its length. In that light, Lannery saw more figures rushing their way. Time was short. "I won't lose him again," she thought, and in three leaps, sword sweeping aside laser blasts meant for her chest, she was on the man. She saw a moment of fear in his eyes, and then she parted his head from his shoulders, crouching and facing the approaching stargazers, even as she felt blood splash across her neck. Tree scurried along the tunnel and pressed himself to the wall opposite her, aiming and firing his blaster along its length. A grunt, the sound of an impact, and then a woman started screaming. "Wait here," Lannery said. "But..." She did not pause to answer his rebuttal, instead running forward with her bloodied sword raised before her. She force-shoved ahead and heard three voices cry out as their owners were flung back. A blast sizzled past her ear, and she smelled burned hair, scorched clothing. That was good.
"The Force gives you power, and power breeds confidence,"
Master Kinnaid had told her at Stavkesh.
"But confidence can be your enemy."
Lannery was never one to forget her mortality. Tree fired past her, keeping their attackers' heads down as she closed the distance between them. Don't discount the injured one on the ground, she thought. And then she was among them, slashing left and opening a Nogri woman from throat to sternum, ducking and rolling, standing, thrusting to her right and catching a man beneath the arm. He cried out and stumbled sideways, her sword jammed between his ribs. He fell. As she was pulled forward, he turned, tearing blade through more flesh, bones cracking, to point his blaster at her face. Lannery clenched her left hand and aimed a force punch, sending the blaster spinning away. Two of the man's fingers were still clasped around the grip. He slumped away from her, dying, and she stood on his hip to withdraw her sword. A blast from behind her and a brief, gurgled cry. She spun around. The injured woman was slumped against the stone wall, her throat and lower jaw an open wound, raw edges still sizzling from the laser blast that had killed her. 10 paces along the corridor, Tree lowered his weapon.
"She was almost on you."
Lannery nodded her thanks. That was too close. Clumsy, she thought. But now was not the time to analyze her mistake.
"So now they know we're here,"
Tree said. "I think they've known for a while. Come on." They trotted along the tunnel, Lannery casting her senses forward and around them. The flurry of terrible violence had set her heart pounding and blood rushing, and her pulse filled her ears. She knew control and carried the talents to calm herself, but she also knew that the heightened awareness of the fight could be her friend. The Force complimented her. She was her own greatest weapon. They ducked through a doorway, climbed a flight of stairs, and suddenly the stone wall disappeared, and a metal corridor began. She probed ahead, but her vision was clouded now, her force senses blurred. Pan Deep might sometimes serve the Jedi, if Max Hagen was to be believed, but it also strove to protect itself from them. She ran on. To slow down now, to take stock, would be to lose whatever advantage they still possessed. The fighting would have been heard, and perhaps Dale and his remaining stargazers would not have expected her to win through so quickly. The confusion of combat would work to her advantage. Through another doorway, and then there was a room. Behind her, Tree gasped. The room was large. Its walls were smooth, their lines clean. The ceiling and floor were white, like nothing they had previously seen on Nox. It resembled more the interior of a luxury spacecraft than a subterranean manufacturing base. At its center stood a wide table, upon which rested an object swathed in a loose white sheet. Scattered across the table were instruments and components, and around the room were several wheeled cabinets, home to more tools, parts, and obscure technology. It was more like an operating theater than a laboratory. Huddled in one corner were six Cellcaths dressed in plain white lab coats, all of them terrified. And standing beside the table, Dale.
Lannery,
he said. His surprise was evident in his eyes, and the way he threw up his hands. And as he grinned, she was a teenager again, seeing her brother and reveling in his presence. A flush of emotion swept through her, pleasure and sadness, loss and love. He came forward as if delighted at her being there, and for a moment Lannery was consumed by memory. And that was the only moment her lost brother required. Tree screamed, and something struck Lannery's head. As she saw the floor rising to meet her, darkness swallowed her.
Chapter 13. Other Ways. Alchemy should have no part in a Jedi's experience. It is a dark force, arcane and dangerous. It has the power to upset balance. There are other ways.
Temple Master Vordona, 10,456 TYA, though your arrival.
At Onil Kesh, Lannery finds herself, without even realizing that she was lost. Their first few days there are strange. There is an orientation process to go through because of the disruptive influence of the chasm below the temple, and Lannery becomes immersed in the talks, meditations, and instruction. She and several other journeyers spend their time in darkened, windowless rooms, away from any sight of the chasm, and a Sith master guides them through varying stages of sickness and uncertainty. The Sith is a wise old man, and he has done this many times before. He sees their discomfort fade, not lessening, because the chasm will always affect anyone strong in the Force, but simply tempered. And in his wisdom, he perceives that Dale is enjoying all this. Lannery's brother says very little over those first few days at the temple, but he exudes a sense of peace that she has not seen in him before. He enjoys witnessing his sister and the other journeyers suffering. They are given several tours of the Onil Kesh Temple, which is even larger and more incredible than Lannery thought. Each of its three giant support legs houses a complex honeycomb of living quarters, the structures designed to afford as much strength as possible to the supports. Within the legs are dampeners the size of cloud chasers, designed to absorb the incredible pressures placed on the temple by frequent and violent storms originating in the chasm. Huge tanks of pneumatic fluid are stored at regular intervals, and there are also several access ports in each leg for escape craft. None has ever been used, and their tour guide assures them that none are needed. Everything here is large and amazing, the architectural and engineering talent on display, awe-inspiring. Their guide seems to take some satisfaction in this. The massive central body of the temple is supported by these legs, hanging directly above the chasm. And floating around the temple itself, the Tho'yor. Hanging by means unknown, it drifts around Onil Kesh, so it is believed, in tune with the Force. This central area is the heart of Onil Kesh. There are several large laboratories here, along with teaching rooms, private studies for temple masters, libraries, holo suites, and meditation chambers. There are also launch bays from which drones and other equipment are sometimes dropped into the chasm. Lannery is surprised to learn how infrequently this now happens. Every experiment that could safely be carried out on the chasm has already been performed countless times, and still so little is known about the bottomless gorge. Future discoveries, they are told, must arise from more esoteric means. Yet a blazing, pulsing beam of energy is still fired down into the chasm from the very heart of Onil Kesh, seeking information and readings. On the fourth day, the Sith Master frees them from his instruction and tells them that their new masters will be introducing themselves that evening. The rest of the day is their own.
I'm going to look at it, Lannery tells Dale. I'm going outside to see.
She means the chasm.
Even uttering those words causes a flutter of trepidation and excitement in her stomach. She is about to confront something that is still a mystery to even the greatest Jedi, and she wants to do so with her brother. But it's too late.
"It's nothing, really," he says matter-of-factly. "Deep, stormy. I've been out there 4 times a day since we've been here. I'm more interested in the temple than the chasm, though. Have you seen how long the temple legs are? Have you felt how much it flexes in the wind?"
He is toying with her, and he knows that she knows. But he doesn't care. His vision is elsewhere now, always. And soon, something is going to happen. Maybe one day she'll wake up, Dale will be gone, and she'll never see him again. Or perhaps it will be worse than that.
"I'm going to look at it,"
she says again, and as she pushes past Dale, she feels rather than sees his silent chuckle. There are steps that lead up onto a gangway and outside. The heavy metal doors are always kept locked on the inside, as though something from beyond might wish to gain entry. But the dangers are far less physical. She spins the locking handle on a door, and it swings inward. The blast of air is shocking. Loaded with warm raindrops, gushing against her like the breath of an unimaginable monster, it carries the smell of something mysterious and deep. Rain patters across the floor and spreads inside, and Lannery feels a moment of panic. What has she let in? She makes a quick decision and steps outside, pulling the door closed behind her. Above her arcs one of the 3 great curving arms of the temple. They act both as counterbalances to the legs, and also as transmitters and receivers, gathering atmospheric charge to fuel Anil Kesh's experiments, and sending out messages from the Temple Masters to other Jedi across Tython and beyond. Its mass shelters her somewhat from the storms. But she can still look down. She walks to the edge of the wide viewing platform and grips the railing. She feels the weight of Anil Kesh behind her, and the protective arms seem to hold her within their shadowy grasp. The temple feels on the breath of the chasm, and its sturdy legs absorb every subtle impact of the wind.
"You always move, seeking to draw my eyes," she says.
It is a line from a love poem she once read in an old paper book of her mother's, and she wonders whether the poet had ever visited this place. Looking down, she wonders whether all Jedi are in love with the chasm. It is mystery. It is depth and infinity on the surface of this world they deign to call their home. Its breath is warm and loaded, and deeper down through the mist of torrential rain, she can see the frequent flash of force lightning, erupting in the darkness and illuminating nothing. It is dizzying and thrilling, terrifying and wonderful. She grips the railing so hard that her fingers hurt and her knuckles turn white, not sure she can ever let go. There is a brief, ecstatic moment when she is tempted to lift herself over the railing and fall. It will end in death, but she will also get to see the chasm's depth, to know its secrets.
It cannot be bottomless. They only say that because no Jedi has reached its bottom and lived. Or none have gone down there and returned,
she whispers, the words immediately stolen by the wind. She is drenched through by the rain. The storm whips curtains of water back and forth across the chasm below her. She feels a hand on her shoulder and instantly fears it is Dale come to do her harm.
I am the chasm, he said,
perhaps meaning that he is a mystery to her now, with a mind that no Jedi will ever be able to fully understand. Lannery freezes. She cannot fight back because she is too shocked and too overcome with a sense of infinity. But then a warm voice says,
Come inside, Lannery, where we can begin our talk.
That first meeting with Master Dan Powell extends long into the night.
I told you to never get in my way. Darkness.
Pain. She heard her own ragged breathing, felt the troubled beating of her heart. Her head throbbed and pulsed, the core of a raging sun in the center of her brain. And she knew that voice.
I never thought they'd send you after me.
She opened her eyes, but the brightness hurt. She closed them. The pain was a weight crushing every part of her. Her scalp was wet and warm, and everything was red. Normally a calm sea, the force within her was now a raging river of confused currents.
I thought they'd have more sense.
Dale, she thought, and tried to sit up. Someone helped.
That surprised her, but she was already gathering her senses.
Stay like this. Be weak. Be wounded.
I knew you were on to me on Kalamar.
How?
Her voice echoed and thumped in her head, pounding her skull, but she could not help asking the question. Dale did not answer.
Didn't think you'd be able to follow. Thought I'd shaken you. But you're persistent.
Was that something conflicted in his voice when he talked about her? Lannery could not tell. He had changed so much, and she knew that without even seeing him. In the distance, a deep rumble. What was that? Where is Tree? She remembered his scream, guessed he was dead, and felt a surprising sadness. Tree was not a good Twi'lek, but he was trying to make himself better. Trying to make up for his past. Lannery opened her eyes again and looked at her brother. He was blurry to begin with, swaying in her vision like a scar serpent waiting to strike. She closed one eye and her sight settled. Dale manifested, down on one knee before her as if questioning one of the elder gods.
You've grown up,
Lannery whispered. Dale laughed. She recognized the sound, but there was something grating in it. Something mad. And he had grown up. Gone were his boyish good looks, replaced by a weathered countenance that carried every day of every year that had passed. He'd lost some of his hair, and what remained was speckled gray. There was a scar on his left cheek. He could have done something about the hair and scar, but she saw no vanity in him at all. No evidence of self-awareness about his appearance. His robe was plain and rough. Everything that Dale was now resided in his mad, glittering eyes. Another thud. She felt it through her behind rather than heard it. Dale glanced up at the ceiling.
I've grown in every way, he said. See.
Feel. I don't wanna-
But I'm telling you to! He screamed.
Lannery winced as his voice seared into her head, driving spikes of pain into her eyeballs. Perhaps she'd fractured her skull. She tried to feel, to sense, as they'd taught her in Maharakesh when she finished her great journey without her brother. But she was confused. The force flowed through her, but it seemed to stutter. She could not examine herself, so instead she delved toward Dale's mind.
And withdrew just as quickly.
He grinned, nodding slowly.
You see?
He asked.
You feel?
Lannery nodded, tides of pain washing through her. She sensed nothing at all of the force within him. No light, no dark, no Ashlaw, no Bogan. But he bore an incredible strength that she had only just started to recognize 9 years before. It had grown into something solid. She could only call it madness, and yet... And yet Dale's aims and ambitions were defined, and his route to achieving them firmly set. His madness had method.
Not many people are completely without your force, eh, Lannery? Not many. Not him.
He nodded toward a corner, and Lannery looked, relieved to see Tree propped there. He bled from a wound across his forehead and left eye, and twitched in unconsciousness.
Not even most of my stargazers.
There were three other people around the room now, other than the Sel'kath technicians. They were of differing species, but all dressed similar to Dale. Their look resembled that of a religious order, but they were much more than that. And few religions went that heavily armed. Not many people want to be, Lannery said.
See, that's why you didn't find me, Dale said. Down there in that old dark place. Because you were looking the wrong way. You were searching as if I'd lost something and fled, not found something and set off on my own path. You were looking for a wounded, dying animal. Not the man I've become. I was looking for my brother. And I've already told you. You left the brother you always wanted back in Bodhi with our parents. He's dead now. Long dead.
There was another distant impact, and Lannery absorbed it, examined it. She was more conscious and aware now. She thought it was an explosion.
What's happening? She asked.
Dale stood and approached the covered object on the table. It was the size of a no-grease head, and beneath the sheet it appeared completely spherical.
It's almost finished, he said. Almost ready. You know what this is?
Yes, Lannery said, bluffing. She knew his aims, and what he planned to use to make them real. But really, she had no idea what the device was. Dale rested his hand on the object almost reverentially.
Everything I always wanted.
He whispered it almost to himself.
Dale, shut up.
He didn't even look at her as he spoke, and a sudden change came over him.
You're sure?
He asked the group huddled in the corner.
You're certain?
Yes, one of the technicians said.
He took one step forward.
Your request was, forgive me, vague. We've worked hard. It was a task we relished. And the device is ready to do everything you want of it. It's perfect. One of the finest of our creations. And it pushes at the edge of all our accumulated science. Once it's charged, enough,
Dale said, holding up a hand. He glanced at Lannery. You have no idea what you're doing, she said.
And you have no idea what I've seen.
He nodded at his stargazers.
The violence was sudden and shocking. The stargazers, a human, a Twi'lek, and a Cathar, drew blasters and power bows and opened fire on the scientists. Lannery winced but watched, unable to close her eyes. The Cellcaths danced and juddered as blasts and bolts ripped into them. Blood splashed, fire sizzled across skin, clothes erupted into flames. In the space of 5 heartbeats, the scientists were dead, the last one sliding down the wall to slump across her murdered companions.
Calm, Lannery told herself.
Calm.
And she sought the Force, readying to use it to save herself. The time must come soon. She had to stop him here and now, and nothing here would end well. Dale looked at Lannery. She could not read his eyes. She felt for her sword, but the scabbard was empty. And now me, she thought. Panic came and she washed it away, seeking the familiar Force to prime herself for action. But her pain was still raw, and shock stoked the storms and uncertainties inside her.
You'd lose, Dale said. Maybe you'd take a couple of us with you, but my stargazers are ready for you.
The first touch on their mind and a blaster would open your skull, or a power bolt would cook your heart.
Lannery breathed long and slow, and the moment stretched on.
I wish,
Dale said. She looked for weakness, but saw none. He was expressing frustration, not regret.
Wish what?
I wish you'd understood. I wish you could have opened your mind to our past. Your Force is so constricting. You think it gives you power. You're taught that it's great, but it binds you. You're blinkered by it, but my eyes are wide open. We see the stars. We have a place in the universe that was taken from us by the Tho'yor. They stole us away, brought us here, denied us the future we deserved. And I'm going to take it back.
You'll kill everyone.